Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Hello, everybody. A big welcome back to Stoma for Life. If you're tuning in for the very first time, this show is all about raising awareness around life with stoma and the reality of it, the challenges and the strength behind every story. As a bowel cancer survivor living with a stoma, I created the space to share, support and spotlight voices that matter. And this month, October, is something truly special. Because for the first time ever, Stoma for Life has been taken over by Dansec for a full month of powerful conversations and shared stories. Now, if you haven't come across Dansec before, let me tell you, they're not just a brand. They're a company rooted in Denmark, now part of the Hollister family, and they've been specializing in stoma care since 1971. But what makes them stand out is what they believe in. That's behind every pouch is a person. I've trusted their product since my very first bag change, and I'm proud to now be one of their ambassadors. This series also celebrates World Ostomy Awareness Day, recognized earlier this month with the global theme Empowering Ostomates Worldwide to be Comfortable. And that's what this month's takeover is all about. Part of that empowerment means showing that stoma life isn't a one-size-fits-all. People of all ages, backgrounds, and experience live with stomas for many different reasons. Every story is different and every voice matters, which brings me to today's guest. I'm joined by Nikita Patel, a brilliant 25-year-old who's been documenting her journey with Crohn's disease and a permanent stoma online. She brings honesty, insight, and a voice that's helping others feel seen. Nikita, welcome to Stoma for Life.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this podcast.
I am as well. To start things off, I'd like to just take the listeners back to how it actually all started with you. What was your life like before your stoma, like physically and emotionally, day to day?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when I was 10 years old. So as you could imagine, I was in primary school at the time, and I didn't really understand what having Crohn's disease meant for me. I'd never heard of it. I just started having these awful symptoms like diarrhea, stomachache. I couldn't really eat. I lost so much weight. I was sick all the time. And it got to a point where I was missing so much school. And then I was in and out of A&E all the time, in and out of the GPs. Everybody just couldn't figure out what was wrong. So it actually took around 6 months from when I first started going to the doctors to then getting a diagnosis. And I still remember the only, I think the only reason why I ended up getting a diagnosis when I did was because my parents just kept taking me back to A&E. They were like, there's something wrong with her for sure. And the day I got admitted, it was because I had lost so much weight from the last time. And it was only a few days apart, but I was losing so much weight so quickly that they were worried. But they were more worried that I might have an eating disorder or there was something else going on. They didn't ever really consider that it could be Crohn's disease. And then I got admitted. I remember having a colonoscopy, so many scans and ultrasounds and everything going on. And then that's when I got diagnosed. So then I got my stomach bug at 18, but for all those years, I was just struggling with the symptoms and, you know, in and out of school. Even for my GCSEs, I missed so much school, and then I ended up going back just to take my exams, which is obviously just not what you want when you're a child. And yeah, I just found everything really difficult. Like physically, I wasn't well. And, you know, even aside from academics, like my social life, I felt like I couldn't really hang out with friends or do all the things that I wanted to do like a normal child would be able to. When I use the word normal, I don't mean like any other, like people with Crohn's disease are obviously normal, but it's more that when you're that age, you just feel like when you look around, like, why am I standing out and why am I so different? So yeah, it was just a really hard time. And when I got my stoma, that's when everything like really changed for me.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to touch on your age, because obviously 10 years is, when you're 10 years old, you're going through a very emotional time, as is in any case, because 10 going on to 11, you know, going, your teenage years are sort of right there in reach, and you're going through so many other changes. And then to deal with a chronic illness like that I am sure you, like you said yourself, you'd not heard of before, and then family and friends as well dealing with that. And I can imagine you've got to find your way, but it's a disease that comes at the most inappropriate or inappropriate moment, and something that you can't really influence. So how did you deal with that? Did you speak openly about it to your friends?
No. So when I was in primary school is when I got diagnosed. And I feel like at that age, because I already knew the people around me, like, you know, people in year 5 and year 6, and you know the teachers. So it felt kind of okay to let people know that I might be poorly or I might have an illness. I never went into any of what the symptoms were. That was way too embarrassing for me to talk about. And then obviously transitioned into high school. So like year 7, I feel like everybody who's moved to high school can relate, when you just feel like, I need to make friends. I need to make sure I'm still not popular, but like people want to be friends with me. And I want to come across as like just somebody who's chill, can hang out with, and likable. And for some reason in my head, that meant I couldn't talk about any of the symptoms that I was experiencing. I was just so embarrassed. And I remember school, like high school in particular, the one that I went to, I had such a hard time because they had other random rules there. Like, obviously, there's a typical ones around uniform and stuff, but around toilets, it's like you couldn't leave class to go to the toilet. And if you wanted to, you had to have a medical pass. The toilets were always locked, so you'd have to go to reception to get a key and then go to the toilet. And like the amount of times that I just thought, well, I'm not going to make it, or this is when I'm going to have an accident. And like as a child, there's just so much stress to go through. And the fact that I felt so embarrassed that I couldn't tell anybody around me. I remember when I would ask to go to the toilet, I'd be so discreet, like showing the teacher my pass to go out of class. Yeah. And then everybody would be like, oh, how come they always let you go? How come, yeah, what about when I ask, why do they not let me go? Yeah. And I never wanted to explain what was going on to anybody around me. And I also think around that time, like I was really trying to understand my culture. because, like, as a brown girly, as a South Asian girly, it is very difficult to talk about any differences that you might be experiencing. In the culture itself, it's very, like, you don't talk about if you have an illness or a disability or you're going to have surgery. Just, it's not the norm to be so open about things like that. So it was even with extended family, if I ever went to see them, I wouldn't say anything. I would eat things that might cause a flare-up. I would just sit there in pain. I would pretend that I'm fine. But it's like, we would never want them to know. My immediate family did. Like, my parents do, my sister does. But yeah, it's just that fear of being judged by society. And like, a lot of, hopefully there's a lot of South Asian people listening who couldn't relate to that, and like, unfortunately relate to that as well, because I think there's such a lack of representation in, like, online, in the media, of seeing people who look like us speak out about it, that then it's almost normalized when you are in those situations with extended family and, like, your own community, that you feel like, I can't even say it to them because people like me don't say it.
That must have been extremely, extremely tough. And you said, yeah, you got your stoma at 18. Maybe just take us right through to how bad it must have been, extremely bad for you to actually go down that path. What did the doctors actually say? Did they say right from the beginning, this is an option, or only when you got more poorly?
So I had, like, quite a few years out of school due to my health. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, the anxieties that, like, formed around my health and, like, not being close to a bathroom. And then I remember this one particular flare-up I had. It was so bad. Like, even though I was already out of school and at home trying to recover, it was so bad that I ended up in hospital. And this was kind of normal for me. Like, every few months, you know, you'd end up in hospital, you'd get put on some IV steroids and you'd go home. And you'd just do that over and over again every few months. And I thought this was just going to be the same thing. I thought, I'm just going to go in, they're going to, you know, hook me up with some meds and I'll be all right. And I was there for a week. And I remember I was just thinking, like, oh, I'm taking the steroids. Why am I not feeling better? Because normally it would be an instant, like, yay, I'm feeling good now, I'll just go home again. I was there a week. I was on, like, really high, like, really strong painkillers, like morphine. And yeah, I was like, none of this is even taking the edge off of me being in so much pain. I still couldn't eat really well. And obviously they monitor all those things in hospital. They take it into account if you can eat, if you're throwing up, if you're in pain. And I obviously wasn't getting sent home because I was so unwell. And then the surgeon, I remember, like, I'd met him at a couple of clinics before, but it's because every time they discussed the option of even having a stoma, I would immediately shut it down. Like, there was no way I was having surgery. There was no way I was having a bag. Like, I would rather have done anything else. And then I remember him coming into my room, and it was just me in this little cubicle, and he said, you're just not feeling well, are you? And I was like, no, I'm sure I'll be fine. Like, I just want to go home, send me home. Because I hated, like any child would, I hated being in hospital. And he just sat down and he was like, look, I don't think the medication is going to make you feel better. And the way he explained it to me was, medicines can make things feel better if there's not a mechanical problem. But he explains that the way that my intestine was and how diseased it had gotten and, like, the amount of cells that just weren't recovering, he explained it in a way of, that's a mechanical problem. No tablet and no IV infusion is going to fix that. And I think that's when it really, like, just sunk in for me. I was like, this is actually pretty serious what he's saying to me. Mm-hmm. And he was like so in depth about what was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Like he went through and was just like, you know, if you leave it, your intestine is going to rupture. There's going to be toxins in your body and you're so poorly, you would not survive that. And I just thought, like, you're actually asking me if I would rather die or if I'd rather get a stoma bag. And before that, all the times that the option of getting surgery came up, I was just like, no, it's never going to be me. It's literally never going to be me. And then at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm really in the situation where I've just got to choose to get a stoma. And when I say choose, it's like you don't even have a choice because that's your only option. I remember begging him. I was like floods of tears. I was begging him, like, I will do anything. I'll take any disgusting medicine. I don't even care. I'll stay in hospital for longer. You can fix me. He was just like, there's unfortunately just no way around it. But I remember, like, just trying to talk him through any other option. Like, I was so desperate. And that's even when I considered, like, you know, do I ask my family to take me to private healthcare? Like, is that going to be different? Can they fix me there? Can I just avoid surgery? And it's like, even if I had gone private, I know, like, my intestine was so bad. There wasn't going to be a fix. Yeah. So I did have to get a stoma surgery. And they tried to book me in pretty quick because they realized, like, I was mentally not well. Like, I just couldn't. I think if they had given me any longer, I would have kept trying to back out of surgery. So they booked me in very quickly when I needed it. I remember I just got the call and it was like, hi, we've got space tomorrow. Like, come into hospital. And I went, and even that morning, you know, I kept thinking, like, if I don't feel like it, I'm just going to tell my dad to take me home. It's all I kept telling myself. And when I got there and I spoke to him, he was like, how are you feeling? Like, you know, we're going to take care of you. Everything's going to be fine. And I was like, what if I just want to up and leave? And he said, you can, but you won't be well. And you'll end up here in an even worse situation where you might not survive. And again, that, like, it's just those words I remember that hit so deep, because every time I was just considering, can I just go home now? Like, can I just leave it here? I just can't be bothered to carry on fighting like this. And yeah, at that point as well, like, around the discussions with stomas, because of the place of, like, where my Crohn's disease was, it was like my whole large intestine, my rectum, hence why I've ended up with a permanent stoma. I was even, like, begging them to do it so it's reversible, because I was like, well, if I have to get surgery and I have to get a stoma, let it be reversible, and in a year or two when I feel fine, I'll get it reversed. No one will ever know that I've had a stoma. That was my mentality. And looking back, I just think, I can't believe I was thinking about if I've got a pouch on my stomach or not when I was about to die. Like, I don't know. Like, I clearly wasn't thinking well, and I clearly wasn't mentally well enough to be dealing with that. But yeah, it just wasn't an option for me to get a reversible stoma. I had to get a permanent. Mm-hmm. But thinking about it now, even if I had a reversible one, I think I'm at a point where I love my stoma so much that I wouldn't have got it reversed.
It's interesting that you're saying this, because, like you, I also have a permanent one. Mm-hmm. And I said to my husband, even if I could reverse it now, I would just leave it, because the surgery was so immense and it took me forever to recover. And I'm happy the way things are. Like, don't change a winning combination. That's what I said. And I can so relate to that, because I feel exactly the same. And I love my stoma as well. It's part of me now. I must say, I sometimes even forget I have one. Because it's just so part of me now. But I get exactly what you said with all the fears, the unknown beforehand. And it's only normal. I think every single person that I've had on the show has said exactly what you said. You know, I'd rather go a different path, but I don't want a pouch. I don't want the bag. And it's fully understandable, because let's face it. I mean, it's nothing that we actually choose. It chose us because of what we went through. And now I can certainly say so. And the way I see you, you're living your best life now after stoma surgery.
Yeah, and I actually regret not getting my stoma earlier because, and everybody can say that with hindsight. I think maybe a lot of people who were really reluctant to get a stoma now feel the same way when they choose, like their health and, just being able to function. Like all the times that I think about my childhood and all those years that I was so poorly, and like I couldn't go out with friends, I couldn't eat, and I just thought if I got it earlier, I would have been okay enough to attend school. I would have been okay enough to see my friends. I would have been okay enough to go to that birthday party, to go eat with everybody else who was doing all these things that I was always so jealous of. And I just felt like I missed out on my childhood because of my perception of what having a stoma was at the time, which I regret. But if you asked me if I had to go back, would I have just got it earlier? I know I still would have stayed true to myself and put it off as long as possible. It's like I think the two can coexist, where in hindsight you know what was good for you, but at the time I didn't want to do anything that I would regret at that point either. Because once you have a permanent stoma, you can't ever take it back. So, yeah.
Exactly. And you cannot, you should not put any blame on you at all. And you never know, you've actually tried your utmost to get well and to not have it. And you've gone every possible avenue and you were true to yourself. And then you took it upon yourself and you did have the surgery. And I think that in itself is a huge and gigantic leap for yourself, standing up for yourself and being true to yourself. So don't blame yourself or I don't think you should.
No, it is hard because I think if I'd got my stoma earlier and just say if I'd had any complications or anything, I know at that point I would have beat myself up anyway. So I just think that the time that I got it is I was at my poorliest and like I know that I'd done everything else. So then this was my last option. And I think that's what makes me feel better when I think about it is like I did try. And like nobody could ever take that away from me.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Let's fast forward to now. You're 25 and you're quite visible on social media. Like myself, you're also a Danzig ambassador. Just tell us how this transition came about, because obviously you didn't share at all, and now you are sharing.
Yes. So I got my stoma. I was 18. I was in second year of sixth form. And I feel like that is really where I transitioned to more like just having more confidence. And I think it's, I don't know if you feel the same way, but talking about poo when you haven't got a stoma feels really embarrassing. But then when you have got a stoma, you almost just word it as, oh, it's output, it's waste. And I think the terminology really changes. And it just made me feel like, oh, okay, this is okay. I can talk about it because it's a different experience to like a lot of other people, but the terminology is different. And I think that's what made me feel comfortable. And then on social media, when I first started social media, I was like every other teenage girl, like into makeup and into fashion. And so I was just posting bits and bobs around that. I'd never shared that I had a chronic illness or anything. And then it was maybe a couple of months before I got my stoma, I just shared this post. It was one of just like a really honest, like long caption, and it was like, I've got Crohn's disease, this is how you know, it affects me. These are some of the symptoms I have. Again, no mention of diarrhea, no mention of poo. Like that was too embarrassing for me to talk about. And then a few months later, I got my stoma. And I remember I posted a picture and I showed my stomach online. And I just said, like, you know, this is basically what's happened. I've been so poorly all this time, and now this is the result of it. And I did that at the time because I was worried if other people found out and I hadn't explicitly told them that they might, like, make fun of me or they might say something negative towards me and I wouldn't be able to handle it. So my mechanism to deal with that was I'm going to post the picture first. And I'm going to write my caption first and my story first. So now if anybody says anything, like, my way to respond was humor. Like, I can now take any poo joke. I will make all the poo jokes. And it just helped me so much because I wanted to be the person who just said it outright rather than having the fear of, oh, will they still like me if they find out?
Yeah. I get that. I think it's very clever the way you did it, because obviously it was also on your terms. You were the one deciding on when it gets spoken about by posting online. What about your friends, the ones who hadn't told all these years?
Yeah. So my immediate friendship group, because we were close. So like they knew I was poorly or had some form of illness, and a lot of the times, especially like if I had to cancel on plans or can't go out, I just say, I'm kind of poorly at the moment, or I can't eat right now. I just say that like throughout high school, and then they were my support system when I got told I was getting a stoma and then going through it. So they were there for me, and I could tell them what I was getting, but I never explained what a stoma was to them. And I just hoped that they Googled it and they had found out themselves, because I never wanted to tell them, these are my symptoms right now, this is what I'm experiencing, and this is what I'm going to get. Like, those words could not come out of my mouth. And I think, in a way, like, me being that way, I assume, to this day, I still don't know if they had gone and researched it themselves, but I assume that they had, because that's the only way I felt like they supported me the way they did.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you spoke about it earlier on, because you said it was a challenge, obviously, growing up also in a South Asian household and not talking openly about that. Has that changed now?
Not as much as I would like.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I go anywhere, say like it's just been Navratri, so it's like that's the Hindu celebration in the lead up to Diwali, and I was wearing a chunya choli and saris, that has your stomach showing, but I made sure that you couldn't see my stoma, mainly because I just didn't want anybody to judge me. And I felt like I also couldn't be bothered in terms of like having to deal with that conversation when I'm going out for a celebration. And I'm sure you'll feel the same as well. Like in certain scenarios, you just want to forget that you've got a stoma and you just want to enjoy life like as it is, like everybody else is. And yeah, so that was my decision. I could have worn something that revealed it, that showed it off, that shows my scars, but I just chose not to. And even with extended family, I imagine some of them may have just found out by, like, you know, people talking to each other and things get around. But I've not explicitly gone and told them that I have a stoma bag. And it's not even that I fear the judgment anymore from especially my family. Like, I think if people were to find out, they find out, isn't it? It's just the way it goes. But I don't think there's that space where you can say, I have a stoma and I raise awareness for it. I think the they can probably understand that I've got a stoma, but not the raising awareness part. And I just wouldn't want to be judged for it or to feel like I can't keep sharing that online. So then I just haven't been open about that part with them.
But you've done, I mean, I've looked at your Instagram page. Perhaps you can just share your actual handle for the listeners to actually follow you. That's on Instagram. And I think TikTok, you've also got an account.
Yeah, they're both the same. They're just Nikita X Patel X. And on there, I've just been sharing, you know, my journey, my different surgeries. My original stoma surgery isn't just the only surgery I've had. I've had like a couple since then as well. Due to like some of the complications and stuff that happen, I've shared still being on medication, even though I've got surgery, which some people don't always understand the concept of, because I think for a lot of people, they think if you're so poorly and you get a stoma, that you're never going to have to take medication again. But really, a stoma is just one of the treatment options. And with Crohn's disease, it can affect anywhere from your mouth to your rectum. So that disease can be prevalent anywhere. And a lot of mine actually came back in my mouth, which was so unfortunate after I got stoma surgery. So I've been on medication for that. And I still am. I still am on medication. So I just share bits and bobs. And yeah, like yourself, I've been working with Dan Sack for the past couple of years, and now this is the third year, which is so amazing and so cool. And I know that if I had told 18-year-old me that I was doing that, I would not believe it. But as somebody who uses like a Dansac bag every single day, when they first reached out to me and asked if I wanted to do socials with them, like, I just thought, oh my god, like, that's so cool. Like a brand that literally helps me function every single day. Wants to work with me. Like, I just thought that was the coolest thing ever.
It's amazing, because I also, like yourself, would never have thought I'd do this. And I'm forever grateful to be able to do this, because let's face it, I've had guests on my show from all walks of life and from everywhere. And our healthcare system might always be criticized for a lot of things, but honestly, we cannot complain, because all we do is just phone up, or we get phoned, put in our order, and we get our life-saving bags. It's absolutely marvelous. And I know cases where it's not like that. I've had people on where things look completely different. And I spoke to Lisa Murphy. She was the first one on the Dansac special series here on Stoma for Life. And she is raising awareness as we speak by climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, because in Africa, things look completely different. They don't have the pouching systems that we have. And if they do, they only get limited amounts to go home with. And I mean, that's something I cannot even comprehend that. Imagine not having the bags that you need, because we can live our best lives through the bag, having a bag.
I honestly, I've seen quite a few posts like that actually on social media, where people are asking if you've got leftover supplies and stuff to give them to people who need them. And yeah, I feel so fortunate that we're in the UK where you can get it on prescription, and I'm not having to, you know, fund it or anything. Yeah, it does make me feel like really lucky, because I can't imagine a place where you don't have the medical supplies you need, and like the way that that would affect your entire life as well.
Absolutely, because it's such an emotional burden, because all those questions that obviously you have when you are a first or a new ostomate, there are so many questions. Will it stick? Will it leak? Will it, you smell it? All those things. We know we can handle, because we've got our pouching system, but for somebody that doesn't have any of that, and that's on top of their mind every single day, that is just, your mental health must suffer. So it's just tremendous. So.
Yeah, it's just an additional worry. Like the way that you've got to stress about everything else with a stoma, And then the last thing you need is to not even be able to get the supplies.
Yeah. So huge shout out to, well, first of all, to Danzig for supplying us with our incredible pouches, and to the people that raise awareness now at the moment, climbing Kilimanjaro or whatever they did, also for World Ostomy Awareness Day. I think it's the right step on raising awareness and making other people aware of things can be totally different. And it's something I never ever thought of before being diagnosed. I'd never even heard of the word stoma before. It's quite an important mission. You as an ambassador also, I can only congratulate you on that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Looking ahead, I'm sure you'd love to see change in a lot of things, especially also in the South Asian community, to speak more about it. What, when it comes to stoma awareness and acceptance, would you like things to change?
I think it's the representation, because I feel like for the change in the South Asian community is you've got to see it in front of you. You've got to see it on your screens. You've got to see it on your adverts. You've got to see it in your shops, on your social media. And I feel like it's a bit of a toxic cycle where we say in our community, like, oh, you shouldn't talk about things that are different. So you shouldn't talk about your illness and you shouldn't talk about your surgery. But at the same time, if you're being told you can't do that or you fear being isolated from your community, it's like, why would you go and create that awareness? And why would you raise awareness for it? But at the same time, I think there's a lot of, how do I word it? Like brands or companies or, you know, any, let's just go with company, any company who is using models, say, why are you not using people with a stoma? And then, you know, when you get to a point where you are using people with a stoma, why are they all white?
Yeah.
But, and it's so true. Like sometimes you see it and, you know, you might not think of it straight away. And if you especially are seeing people who look like you on the internet, you might never see anything that's wrong. But then for me, if I look at a certain charity or a certain brand and I just think, hang on a second, there's nobody who looks like me on there.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if I don't see myself, how can I relate and how are my views validated by society? It's just not possible when you can't see yourself.
Yeah, it makes the conversations so much more difficult. So actually what you're saying is also the responsibility also lies with the retail or the marketing of these products, I would say, or of the way it gets portrayed, you know, that you find I'm seen as well, you know, I'm represented here as well. And that would, I think, would, if I could say it, normalize it for that community as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's it. It's because I've been creating social media posts around it for a while. And I'm not saying, oh, it should be me on this poster or this ad. I'm not saying it has to be me personally, but there is a community on social media who are from a South Asian background who do create content around stoma, around IBD, around their disabilities. And it's like, I don't see them on these big campaigns all the time. But what I do see is white people. And that might be because more of them are talking about it because they feel like they're in a safe place and are able to. But for the small community of, say, people from a South Asian background who are doing it, you naturally don't get the same opportunities. And you can always say like, oh yeah, but there was a brown person on this, or a black person on this campaign. But we don't want to be the token singular person on that campaign. I think this is where brands, charities, anybody needs to be making sure that there's an equality in that sense, because just seeing one brown body or one black body is not enough. That's not representation, and it's not representative of the population either.
No, very true. And I think you are going the right direction by first of all single-handedly raising awareness, and I think that's the right way to do it as well. People will be more aware of it. And now us talking about it, it's something that I myself have never really thought of. And I'm glad you're raising this because obviously, yes, if I would only see somebody that wouldn't would I would not be able to identify with, I'd also question my own what's the right word for it,
It's just like a sense of identity, isn't it?
exactly,
It's like
absolutely.
if I can't see myself, like it is everything that I feel and the culture that I'm in is it almost makes you feel like, is this even real?
Yes, let's hope that we have opened the dialogue, the conversation, and also raised awareness on this topic, because it goes so much further, like we've just established, than just, raising awareness. It's not just that. It's about a whole cultural awareness that has to be raised. And well, whoever's listening, please try and share, because that's, I think, the biggest game changer is when people share and talk about it, because then the conversation is open and it's going moving forward.
Exactly. I think a lot of the times people, they might have an awareness of it, or they might talk about it, but it might be privately. And I think people publicly can be scared of getting it wrong and saying the wrong thing, that I think also prevents a lot of, say, brands. They're trying maybe to do the right thing, but because they're just so worried of saying the wrong thing that they don't take that step. And it's like, we just need people to actually listen to us. And if you're not sure, then come ask. Like, come ask, come work with us, come ask us to be on a campaign, and we will do that. But it's if we're not even being presented with the opportunity, it's so difficult to make that cultural change.
I just hope that whoever's listening, you can, it's up to, I think it's up to obviously the individual, but also in that case, also about the greater awareness on a more global scale, even. Crohn's disease, cancer, whatever, it does not stop at your race, the people, it affects everybody. And I think that's what people need to see as well, and to see that you can live well with it.
That is so important. I think a lot of the times when you think that someone has a stoma, you just think, oh, they're so poorly. Like, they've got a stoma because they're so poorly. And people don't see it as like, it's such a life-changing thing to have one and then just be able to get on with life and just live life to the fullest. It's like you're not in survival mode anymore. You're actually thriving. And yeah, I think there's such a big like misconception around if you've got a stoma, you've somehow, you're upset or you're not being able to do all the things you want. And I think that's why I also raise a lot of awareness around like you still wear whatever you want, you still eat, all the foods that you couldn't eat before, like the majority of them I can eat now. Things like going out, seeing friends, making new friends. I've moved out, got a new job, and all of that. I wouldn't have been able to do without my stoma because I just wasn't well enough to.
I called the show Stoma for Life because mine is for life, but it is also for living, for creating life, because it's given us our life back. It's something that the other day, actually, a friend of mine said, you know, sometimes I forget you've got one because we were out and I said, listen, I've got to go and find a toilet. And then she said, oh, I sometimes forget you've got this.
Yeah.
To me, it's a compliment.
Yeah, it is. And I think I actually feel the same way. Sometimes, like in the day to day, you just forget because it's so normal and it's such a big part of you that it's like it's just any other body part. Like you wouldn't think differently about your hand or your leg. So yeah, I do that as well.
Yeah. So for anybody listening who's perhaps on the brink of having stoma surgery, I think this is a very important message that Nikita has just shared, because you know you've got all those are all valid fears that you've got, but she is living her best life as she's just described. And for actually all my guests that I've had on so far, they've all said exactly the same thing. They have gained back their life and gained so much. They've lost something, yes, but they've also gained a lot.
Yeah, I think like your confidence wise as well, I think is what I would say is before you get a stoma, like, and I'm talking from the perspective of someone who has Crohn's disease, but I think beforehand your confidence level is so low because you're just poorly, you've not been able to socialize, not been able to do everything that other people around you are doing. And it's like a comparison game. And then once you get your stoma and you can do everything, it just feels like the confidence has been boosted because I'm not the one who's different and left out anymore.
And every small step is a victory. Not everybody wants to share their story, which is totally valid. It's totally okay. I've had people on here that really they spoke out for the first time here on the radio show because they had not really spoken about it openly before, but they felt they had to share it. But then there are others that don't want to, and that's also totally okay. But I think we've taken it upon us to raise awareness, and I think a lot of people appreciate that because, well, they get the feeling that they are part of a community that sees them, and that we get them as well, because I think it's different to when somebody with an ostomy sees it than to somebody that doesn't have one. You know, they are just things that are different. I can share better with somebody that isn't an ostomy as well, that will understand. And that's what we aim to do here. Me with Stoma for Life, you with sharing it on social media as well. And also showing the reality, you know, it's not always hunky-dory.
Yeah, exactly. There are definitely ups and downs.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, like, well, the way I think about it is my down right now might be I've had a bag leak or, you know, I don't feel so great. I'm a bit fatigued.
Yeah.
But then my down, you know, like 7 years ago was I was in hospital.
Yeah.
So I will take these downs any day over being in hospital, being unwell, not being able to do anything.
Yeah. We're almost at the end of the show. Now, is there a question that I haven't asked or something that you would like to share where I haven't actually asked you yet?
Oh, I think I'll go with one that I actually get questions a lot about. So when I post things about my stoma, a lot of people ask, like, have you got any tips for someone who's just having surgery? What would you take with you to the hospital? What do you do immediately afterwards? And I would say, take the comfiest clothing that you own and take something that distracts you, like a book, an iPad. You know, make sure that you've just taken something that takes your mind off of the fact that you're getting stoma surgery. Because even if you come to terms with it, you'll never really understand how you're going to feel until it's happened and for the first time that you see it. And then immediately afterwards, I would say, make sure you take care of yourself. Don't rush into anything. And I actually, I was in such a rush to get back to sixth form and carry on with my A levels and get to uni and everything, that I just didn't take the time to just reflect that what I've done is incredible. Like, having surgery is amazing, and I've been so brave. I never took the time to acknowledge that. And I think it's just so important in order to move on, like, mentally as well, and be confident and learn to love your stoma. I'm not saying everybody has to love their stoma, but in order to, like, even start that journey, I think just acknowledging that what you've done is just so amazing. And then again, stay in your baggiest PJs, your joggers, and just enjoy things. Don't feel like you've got to rush back into regular life, because regular life will always happen. You know, like, school will always be there, work will always be there, but the time that you need is, like, the most precious thing ever. And you should just do the things that make you feel happy after surgery.
Yeah. I absolutely love what you said, because you actually spoke about something that a lot of people forget. And it's about this self-care, or looking after yourself, and even as far as going to self-love, because we have to start loving this body again. And maybe some didn't even love it before, because it gave them so much problems and was more like a living hell. But it's a new form, and I think it's so important to practice that, to practice the self-care aspect of it. And you've actually just touched on it, and I'm glad you did, because I think it's such an important topic and point. I've had somebody on many, many shows ago who spoke about how to actually function without raising your stress levels, you know, looking after yourself. And self-care is actually something that a lot of people don't quite understand, because it's more, they sort of bring it into the context of being selfish, but it's not. It's so, so important. I love what you said. Yes, wear your comfy clothes and just take one day at a time, and every step, celebrate the little wins. Every step is important.
Exactly. I think it helped me so much as well, because I did the slowing down after I went back to school, because that was a priority in my head that, looking back, I definitely could have just relaxed. But I did my slowing down afterwards, and that's when I felt like, okay, I can carry on now. And even still, I practice self-care, and I will do the things that I enjoy. I do things for myself, like, nearly every day, that are just for me. And I think when you're at a point where you have had, like, not the option to get a stoma, and the alternative was to not be here anymore, that I think you should live every day to make it worth that.
Nikita, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your story with such honesty and strength and from the heart. You've shed a light on an experience that too often is hidden, it stays hidden, and especially around your age and also the culture and identity. You've really opened my eyes, and I'm sure the listeners' eyes as well, to this. And I know your voice is helping so many others feel seen. Keep doing what you're doing, because it's really, really powerful. For everyone listening, remember, your story really, really matters. There is no right or wrong way to live with a stoma, just your way.
Exactly.
Until next time, thank you so much, Nikita, for sharing your story. Keep living your way.
Thank you so much, Paul.